Books of Elsewhere, Chapter 5, page 29. For the next few days, Olive kept her eyes open. She kept them so wide open that they started to dry out. She even tried not to blink, but 3 days went by with nothing more unusual than Mr. Dunwoody tripping on the stairs and falling half a flight, and this was because he was reading at the time. Horatio the cat, whether he was a dream or not, stayed out of sight. Once Olive thought she saw him looking down at her from an upstairs window, while she took a bucket of compost out to the backyard. But, really, she wasn't sure. If this house was truly trying to get rid of them, it seemed to be taking its time. Most days, Mr. and Mrs. Dunwoody stayed home working in the library. Some days, one or both of them would go to campus to use the computers in the math lab, or to work in their offices. Either way, Olive had most of the house to herself. And Olive was used to being on her own. Each time one of her parents took a job at a different college, Olive had to switch to a new school. She had done it 3 times already. 4 weeks or months, she would be the new girl. The one who got lost on her way to the art room, who was wearing the wrong kind of laces on her tennis shoes, who always got picked last for teams. Of course, if Olive had been able to catch, hit, or kick a ball, this might have been different. Like Mr. and Mrs. Dunwoody always said, she would get used to things eventually, but it was getting harder and harder. Every time she switched to a new school, Olive tried to be like a chameleon. Silently, she would observe the other children and change color until she disappeared into her new environment. But she was getting a bit tired of this. If she were really a chameleon, she would have picked a nice tree and stayed there, wearing her favorite shade of green and never having to turn pink or yellow again. Fortunately, the start of the school year was still more than 2 months away, and as far as making friends went, she didn't need to worry. All the people on Linden Street looked just about as old as their houses. There weren't even any young trees in their yards, not counting flowers, bugs, or a few pairs of socks. Olive guessed that she was the youngest thing in the whole street. Inside the big stone house, Olive wandered from room to room, staring at the paintings. She had tested every picture frame in the house, pushing and pulling on the paintings of dancing girls, crumbling stone castles, and bowls of odd-colored fruit. All of them stuck to the walls, as if they had been slathered with superglue. She had even tried to pry the painting of a romantic French couple off the living room wall with a butter knife, and all she achieved was a big gash in the wallpaper. Fortunately, Mr. and Mrs. Dunwoody didn't notice. She explored the upstairs bedrooms, and there were 5 bedrooms besides the 2 where Olive and her parents were sleeping. Guest rooms, Mr. and Mrs. Dunwoody called them, even though the Dunwoodies never had any overnight guests. Olive imagined that all of those rooms were already occupied, and guests were living in each one of them, but had always just gone out whenever Olive went in. It made the house seem friendlier. The first room at the front of the house was papered with pink roses on a pinker background. Smelled like mothballs and was very old potpourri. There was a dusty wardrobe in the corner that still had a nightgown and slippers in it. There was also a great big painting of an old town somewhere in Italy or Greece with crumbling pillars and a half-formed walls and a huge stone archway in the foreground, decorated with the stern-faced soldiers 3 or 4 times the size of a human being. The other buildings showed their age. But that arch looked as solid and untouched as it must have looked when it was first carved. Olive peered down the arch's shady tunnel. Beyond the far end, small white buildings crumbled away into the narrowing distance. The second room was dark blue and somber, with an old hat rack and a dresser full of handkerchiefs, shoehorns, and other useless stuff. The blue room had a painting of a ballroom where an orchestra played while couples in old-fashioned evening clothes danced. Everyone looked very serious and graceful and didn't seem to be having any fun at all. The third room was Olive's favorite. With its pale violet paper and tatted lace curtains, it looked delicate and grandmotherly. While the other guest room smelled of dust and age, this one smelled as though it had been more recently used. A very faint scent of lilacs and lilies of the valley hung in the air. The violet room also had the chest of drawers full of old-fashioned trinkets that Olive had discovered just after moving in. Olive liked to try on the gloves and stick the tortoise-shell combs in her shortish, straightish hair. The pair of spectacles was there, too, still lying in their silk-lined case. A portrait hung over the chest of drawers. It was a young woman, or of a young woman's head, and shoulders anyway, painted in soft pastel hues. The woman's dark hair was pinned up with combs on the sides, and she wore little pearl earrings and a long string of pearl beads around her neck. The woman was pretty, Olive thought, like the actresses in the old black and white movies they showed Sunday afternoons on public television. Her eyes were big and dark, and she had a tiny mouth that tilted up just a bit at the corners. And one afternoon, when Olive was wearing a pink glove on the left hand, a blue glove on the right hand, three scarves around her neck, and all of the tortoiseshell combs she had found, something funny happened. Olive had taken the spectacles out of their case. They were on a long beaded chain, the kind that librarians wear. Olive put the chain around her neck and balanced the spectacles on her nose, and then the portrait winked at her. Olive took off the spectacles and peered up at the painting. The dark-haired woman still stared off the left, not moving, wearing her little smile. Olive rubbed her eyes and she put the spectacles back on. The woman in the portrait winked at her again. This time, her smile got a little wider. Olive waited, barely breathing. Several minutes went by, but the portrait didn't move. Olive started to think that maybe she had hit her head on the corner above the bathtub too many times. She stuffed the gloves and the scarves back into the drawer and hurried out of the bedroom with the spectacles still swinging around her neck. Once somebody had given Olive a puzzle book with secret messages hidden in the pages. To find them, she ran a strip of red cellophane over the pictures and the messages would magically appear. The messages said pointless things like, "Why did the banana leave the party?" "Because he had to split." Eventually, Olive had ripped up the puzzle book and used it for papier-mâché. But the strip of red cellophane had given her an idea. In the hallway, Olive stopped in front of the painting of the forest at night. She squinted down in the moonlight path. As always, she got the sensation of something lurking there in the darkness. Something powerful. Something unfriendly. Then she put on the spectacles and slowly leaned toward the painting, moving closer and closer, until her nose was almost touching the canvas. There. She knew she had seen it before, and there it was again, a tiny white shape flitting in and out of the shadows on the path. Olive watched it run, trip on a root, and stumble. It turned, looking over its shoulder. It had a tiny frightened face, a long white nightshirt, and a scraped knee. It got up limping, and it tried to hurry away. Olive leaned even closer, keeping her eyes on the scurrying figure. Suddenly, she could feel the breeze in the dark forest rushing over her skin and through her hair. The canvas seemed to turn to jelly as her face sank through it. Olive jerked back from the painting. She rubbed her nose. It felt clean, not at all like she had pushed it into a bowl of jello. Carefully, the way you touch an animal that might not be friendly, she stretched her fingers toward the painting. Her hand went through the frame almost as easily as if it were an open window. A tickly excitement bubbled through Olive's body. Tugging off the spectacles, Olive hurried down the stairs and skidded into the library. Mr. Dunwoody was working at his computer. He didn't look up until Olive plunked down on the rug beside him. "Dad," Olive began, "if you wanted to try something, but you weren't sure it would work, and you didn't know if you should try it, what would you do?" Her father swiveled slowly around in his desk chair. "Would it be safe to say that we're not really talking about me here?" "Not really." "Well," Mr. Dunwoody leaned back in the chair, "I would say just a minute." Mr. Dunwoody sat up again. "We're not talking about anything that involves electricity, are we?" "No." "Chemicals?" "No." "Violence towards yourself or others?" Olive paused. "I don't think so." "All right, then." Mr. Dunwoody leaned back again, looking satisfied. "In that case, I would say test your hypothesis." "Test my hypothesis?" "Yes, try a dry run." When Olive looked puzzled, Mr. Dunwoody went on. "A dry run. It's a testing procedure in which the potential effects of failure are deliberately mitigated." Olive blinked. "What?" "It means," said her father more slowly, "try it in a way that won't hurt anybody if it doesn't work." "Oh," Olive got up. "Thank you." "Any time," said Mr. Dunwoody, already turning his back to the computer screen. Olive tromped back up the stairs, repeating the words, "Test your hypothesis, test your hypothesis, test your hypothesis," in a marching rhythm. Herschel was lying on the pillows where she had left him. Olive tucked the bear under her elbow, went to her closet, where she yanked the polka dot laces out of her sneakers. Then she knotted the laces together. She tied them snugly, but not too tight, around Herschel's upper arm. "All right, Herschel," Olive whispered. And when they stood in front of the forest painting, Herschel was poised for a takeoff in Olive's hand. With shoelace anchor wrapped between her fingers, time to test the hypothesis. Olive tossed Herschel at the painting. He hit the canvas with a muffled thud and bounced off into the hallway carpet. Olive regarded him for a moment, then scooped him up. "Sorry, Herschel. I forgot about the spectacles." She settled the spectacles on her nose and rearranged Herschel for a launching. "Now, beginning our second trial, in 3, 2, 1, liftoff!" This time, Herschel flew through the frame. Olive kept a tight grip on the shoelace. She squinted into the dark forest, but she couldn't see Herschel anywhere in the picture. He must have fallen out of sight below the edge of the frame. The leafless trees swayed in the distance, almost like reaching hands. Olive started to feel a bit nervous. Last year at school, the whole class had signed petitions to stop animal testing. She wasn't sure if experimenting with Herschel counted, but it made her feel guilty either way. To give her mind something else to do, Olive started to count to 100. As usual, she got lost somewhere, and 100 came up astonishingly fast. She suspected that she had skipped not only the 80s, but the 70s and the 60s as well. "Close enough," she whispered to the empty hallway. With a step backward, she yanked the shoelace, and Herschel soared back through the frame like a fish on a hook. Olive inspected Herschel from head to toe. He seemed calm. There were no cuts, bruises, or even any dirt on him anywhere. She gave him an appreciative hug and put him back in his place on her pillows. Then she returned to the hallway, took a deep breath, put her hands on either side of the painting, and somewhere far down the path she saw a tiny white shape dart and flicker. Olive leaned forward, her face sank through the canvas, then her shoulders, and before she could grab the frame to stop herself, her whole body toppled forward into the dark and chilly forest.